Okay, well, thank you so much for coming. I'm amazed that so many people have turned up, because I hear that Stand Up No Computer is also riding around at this point at 4 o'clock in some sort of fire organ. He might even go past us in a minute, so don't worry if he does, we can stop and look, because I'm interested to see it too. I'm here to talk about my expanded radio art project, some work that I've been doing. I'm Max Hall, I'm a sound and radio artist, and you probably, some of you might know what that is, some are thinking, what on earth is that, you know, that I'm interested to know more. So I'm going to give you a kind of very quick kind of overview of some of my projects and the things I'm interested in. And I've got quite a lot of slides, probably enough slides as mentioned for about 2 hours, so I'm going to squeeze them into 30 minutes, so just keep it interesting, lots of things to tell you. But basically, I've been investigating radio in all its forms, looking across the spectrum, but also within sort of more residential use as well. So really, I've been also exploring the artistic potential of radio, because I am an artist, I'm a sound artist, and I think I've been thinking about how I could use radio as an area, as a canvas and a catalyst and a place to explore in it, over it, making it. It's kind of what I've been doing. So I did a PhD called Radio After Radio, redefining radio by radio art in the light of new media technology through expanded practice. And I really had a lot of fun doing that. So for about 10 years, all I was thinking about was the future of FM after it had been abandoned, and what we'd be doing it, how we'd be squatting the airwaves. And for each different imagined station, I was imagining a different future for radio. So that was a kind of 10-year project that I did, thinking about futures of FM radio. But whilst I was doing that, I was also absorbing sort of 100-year history of radio art and looking at what contemporaries had been doing. And then kind of riffing on that in my own work. So, the sort of projects I also did a lot of workshops. So it would have, you know, have anyone here done FM transmitter workshops? I did quite a lot of those, teaching people how to make little mini FM transmitters so they could like set up their own little stations and broadcast their material like locally. Just a bit like you're here, imagine you're in your tent, you're just broadcasting to the person in the next tent on their radio. Just small little FM transmitters. So I had lots of fun sort of teaching people how to make them. There's a festival called Supernormal Festival. Some of you probably might have been to that festival. That's a bit similar to here, but with more artists and musicians, and lots of workshops going on there. So it's getting people teaching them how to make transmitters, and we were making them onto interesting objects, like books, for instance, which is a kind of natural breadboard, if you think about it, because I know some people here are quite techie, some others not. If you're an electronic engineer, you kind of use a breadboard to build a circuit. So instead, and so I kind of got interested in all the creative ideas that you could, where you could build a transmitter. So I had to go putting them on books, showing people how to do them in different spaces, and I'll show you a few pictures of some of the workshops later. But this was one done with pots, so basically building transmitters on the outside of ceramic pots, getting people to come as a workshop, getting people to record their dreams, and then play back the dreams through the pots, because it was a homage to sort of early surrealism, when I found out surrealists had a radio show back in the 20s where they'd get people to write in their dreams and then they would reenact the dreams on the radio. So I thought, why not have transmitters that are broadcasting your own dreams in the V&A? So I got to go in the ceramic gallery and to have a go broadcasting their dreams there. So I've just kind of been riffing on radio a lot. I use radio as kind of ready-made, where I like collected loads of radios or broadcast lots of futures to them. But then I kind of, like I say, went under the bonnet, learned how easy it was to make transmitters, because I don't come from an electronic engineering background at all. I'm a sound artist, a musician, a kind of creative person. I found it quite easy to learn, and I think this sort of festival is ideal for that, isn't it, for picking up new skills. So maybe next time I come up, do an FM transmitter workshop if people are interested.
Yeah.
I did a project with the Yorkshire Sculpture Park where I wanted to turn the trees into transmitters, and I'd heard about this guy called Gerald Owen Squire, and he's actually the inventor of Muzak, you know, elevator music and all the music that we were into these days. And it was really interesting to find out that he had been using trees as antenna. So in the American Army in the 1919, this is what this picture is from. He was basically using them as antenna, and I thought, let's do it all the way around. Let's have the trees broadcasting themselves. So built a thing called Tree Radio, and this is basically the transmitter on the tree. And I had some sensors put into the tree, so you could pick up the tree's reaction to light and the tree's reaction to how much water it was had. And so it was a kind of living sculpture, and it was broadcasting 24/7 on FM, kind of a little micro pirate station, really, at the Yorkshire Sculpture Park. So my work is a little bit blurry like that, which I like. Broadcasting the tree, and instead of doing it in a Muzak-like way, it was the opposite. So I was using, and I worked with a guy called Anthony Elliott, we basically used the raw sounds of the components, so we didn't go New Age and give it off any kind of Muzak side sound. We went for a very raw industrial sound, the natural sound that the tree was making, which is quite fun as well, a bit playful in that return. I've also had, as I mentioned, work with radios as ready-mades, and this was one of the projects where I work with some artists called Genetic Moo, and they do kind of interactive digital art where you go in a room and you move around and it makes things happen. So I thought having the radios broadcasting, but then the sounds they were making created patterns, so we kind of created a sort of... A kind of dream space with these kind of radio anomalies. So that's another project. I also got, when I'm looking into that, was looking into the history of radio, and I always kept finding lots of novelty radios that I really liked, and I used using like bird radios and different unusual radios I could find when you could find them. Now novelty radios are kind of disappearing and it's hard to find them. And I heard about radio hacks, which were in the 1950s, one of the basically pith helmets aimed at women. In the colours of lipstick, so they were like bright pink, bright orange and yellow, and this one in the picture is bright red. And so the idea was to wear your portable radio on your head in a pith helmet, and if you moved your head slightly, it would affect the reception. So I was kind of riffing on that, and so I made some radio hats where I did them using baseball hats because I thought they're quite gender neutral, and also the colours were this sort of bright kind of lipstick colours of today, and put in a binaural piece about voice and women's voices on the radio and my own experience of experimenting with my voice, which I don't think is particularly feminine. I think this idea of feminine, masculine voices, which do exist, it was quite interesting playing with that to make this piece called Voice and Gender, and kind of playing with the stereotypes of what a female voice sounds like, which was interesting. So that was another one I did. Then I was asked to do a project thinking about Ash Dieback. So I kind of was thinking about how I could bring that into radio art. And so it kind of tied in with my tree radio project, which is why they asked me. And so I built a transmitter that was transmitting a spore-like broadcast using poetry and scientific explanations of Ash Dieback. And that's a piece of transmission spores. And that's actually on a piece of a tree that actually those white spots are from the Ash Dieback, from the tree that was affected by it. So. Again, it was quite a playful way of showing people and talking about something like Ash Dieback. And so I'm also incorporating some sort of environmental concerns in my work. And lately I've been really focusing on air pollution. And so my projects have got more and more expanded, where I'll use like multi-platforms. So I'll come up with an idea and a concept, but I'll also want it to be aired on the radio. But it could also have other places to be heard. So it could be a surround sound piece. So recently I made a documentary about the worst landfill in the UK, mm-hmm. called Wally's Quarry. I don't know if anyone's heard about it, but it breached its permit 111 times before it was closed by the Environment Agency. And I've been researching landfills because I live next to a landfill. And that landfill got me to make a project called the Radio Air Garden, where I've been growing plants that are really good at absorbing pollution with antenna-like structures. So I'm going to jump ahead and show a few more pictures of from there. Mm-hmm. So these are some pictures from the Radio Air Garden, one of the prototypes I first did at the Bristol City Farm. And so you can see I was using this Aeolian antenna, which was based on 1920s electroculture, which is this way of growing plants using copper coils. And I'm basically riffing with that. Instead of using just copper coils, I used these kind of coils I used in my little mini FM transmitters. So those coils were integrated into the Radio Air Garden. And then I also got a Henry Dagg to work to my specifications to make me a kind of original style, 1920s style antenna, but I added an Aeolian harp on it. And so I'm working on prototypes at the moment. In the picture you can see the original 1920s Aeolian harp, which is that, well, it's an Aeolian antenna. And I want to make a more portable version of that. So if anyone here has got those skills, please get in contact with me, because I know there's many great makers here. I'm looking to make a much more portable, lightweight version, because the first version is very heavy, made out of... it's actually made from gas pipes and parts that would be spoke-made, obviously with the keys on, etc. And so the idea of the project was to set up radio air gardens and all kinds of spaces, and also air some of the projects I've been doing around air pollution. And so specifically the documentary I made last year about the worst landfill in the UK. So, and that was made as a sort of, originally made as a 16-speaker ambisonic, which means sort of surround sound, immersive audio experience that you would hear with lots of speakers. But then you could also just hear a stereo version as well. So I like to do different versions for different spaces to make it have what I call a long tail. So this is a workshop I did last year in Bristol making Aeolian antennas. So we had a go at making their own, and it was just great fun. So maybe next time I come, I'll do make some Aeolian antennas. I'm sorry to just talk about project we're not actually doing any, but I think in this heat, well actually, see, having seen the blacksmith people today, I feel that this actually is a bit cooler to do. And it was really hot last when we were doing that a couple of years back too. So as I mentioned, with these other projects, these sort of immersive projects and these other projects, so I've been thinking about air pollution and also thinking about the effects of landfill. But weirdly, in the last few weeks, that has also meant I've now started thinking about AI data centres, because the landfill where I live, not only has it been failing in terms of the issues that are happening to the general public in my area, the company that run it have now set up a new company, and they have just put in an application to run an AI data centre from the landfill. So I'm actually going to be at a public meeting on Tuesday arguing why it's not a great idea to let the company that has been failing us and the EA is concerned about now run an AI data centre. So this is the perfect festival to be talking to people about AI data centres. So maybe afterwards, if you've got some really interesting understanding of AI data centres, any expert knowledge, will be very welcome, because I feel like I'll be doing a project around AI data centres very soon, because I like to sort of do a project that ties in with my interests and what's really happening to my life and to people around. And so I kind of want to get that in the sort of science and technology work that's doing. There's always that kind of personal human rift. And so, yeah, so I haven't made that piece yet, but I am thinking about it, and something's going to evolve, from that. And I'm obviously going to bring radio into it in some way. And obviously, there's a lot of data traffic going on. It's all wireless technology. It's also using the national grid. We're having massive outages and power cuts in Canterbury, as well as water shortage. So it seems like a great time to sort of focus on those issues. Now, how am I doing for time? Plenty of time, that's good. So these are some of the photographs of one quarry that I was telling you about, where they had basically a fire there the week before I interviewed the people who were basically telling me what it's like to live, you know, next to one of the worst landfill in the UK, where you can't go in your garden, you can't open the windows, you're being gassed in your own home. And unfortunately, I was using that as a learning to kind of make that drop happen where I live. But unfortunately, that's been happening near where I live in Canterbury as well. And in other parts of the UK, in Manchester, in Ellsworth, they've also been having issues with their landfills too. So I'm kind of, because of the internet, we're able to network together and share what's going on. And AI is actually proving to be a really, really useful way to find out flaws in data sets. It's so good at like crunching together material in a really useful way that you can use AI against itself in a way to come up with better solutions, basically, for data centers, because we're all using it, but we need better solutions for landfill and data centers. So when I was talking about expanded radio art, you didn't think I was going to end up talking about those two areas. And this is Dunbar, where they had a landfill fire for a week. The picture looks really beautiful, but there are a lot of landfills in the UK where the housing is right next to the landfill. So you've got people's housing and shops just 200 metres away from landfill. So we don't really want to end up with situations where they're on fire. And so that's something else I'm exploring. How do we avoid this? So my next... another ongoing project is a documentary I'm going to make about the future of landfill. Where do we go next? And I've heard about some quite interesting robots that work at landfill now, and I'm kind of hearing about different things as I collect data. So I'm always interested to hear about new innovations around landfill as well. I also made a track which came out in December, which was on an album about Daphne Oram. Now, Daphne Oram was the founder of the Radiophonic Workshop. Some of you will have heard of Delia Derbyshire and the Doctor Who theme music. The Radiophonic Workshop was basically set up by a woman, Daphne Oram, and she had been exploring how to make her own organics machine, which is kind of an early prototype synthesizer, where she would draw the sound and would make the sound. And so I took the opportunity when I got offered to make a track about using rare samples from her archive to actually go to her garden where she used to live. She had a studio there, and use the plants that she used to grow to make the track. So I worked with Miyoko Shimizu, and we recorded Daphne Oren's garden, and we turned that into and used the music from the garden as well as samples and her techniques to make that track. So that's currently available on an album called Variations Ode to Oren, and you can hear it on the website for free. I've only got half an hour, so I won't play it to you now. Although oddly, being at this festival today, I've noticed there's been a lack of music until just a second, actually. So it's been very quiet today, very quiet. So I feel like perhaps I should pay you a clip of it or something. Now the technology is working. So if I go back to... the other projects I didn't talk about, which I may not have time to do, was I did a project called Skyport Radio, which was looking at how people tapped into and listened to aeroplane traffic, which in the UK is still done on AM, so you can actually listen to aeroplanes as they fly above us and listen to the people chatting to air traffic control, because it's all still done on AM wireless technology. So interestingly, I looked into the history of scanners in the UK, and scanners, you know, I remember my great uncle having a scanner and used to pick us up from the airport and listen to us landing. And you can, in the UK, you've been able to buy scanners for, you know, 80 years. But you, technically, you're not allowed to listen to them. So there's actually a law in the UK which means it's okay to own a scanner, but if you listen to an aeroplane, you're actually breaking the law, which is one of those bizarre laws that no one really knows about. But when I did an exhibition, and one of the engineers knew that law, I wasn't allowed to tune into the flights, so I left it to the audience to have tune in if they wished. You know, it was an issue. But again, really interesting. And obviously people have SDR scanning tools now that you use on the internet to listen to these things. So it's very interesting that we've still got this law in the UK where it's illegal to listen to your scanner. So I made this project called Skyport Radio, which looks at the very first pirate station that was broadcasting next to the runway at Heathrow. So it's near. They were near Heathrow Airport, and they were in a little shed. What, apparently, the road next way from where Freddie Mercury lived. Apparently, and this is the guys that set up their station. I got in contact with them and used some of their archive material for the exhibition, which was great, and sort of tied in this linking of it, kind of in the way that radio does, brings, and now the internet does, which was to bring people together worldwide through AM radio broadcasts. And it's something that's still happening, as you know, lots of people are still doing radio hemming. It's a big deal. Mostly guys, interestingly, so few women, but they were getting more, so it's kind of interesting. That was that project, and this is what the sky scanners look like on in that exhibition. It's a bit dry, but it was a very illegal having that exhibition in London. So you can see from my work, it's been quite varied. I also wanted to do a project with Benjamin Pymeton, which was to take people on a sort of radio trail around the park, and that ended up in a gallery, inside a shed, not quite as exciting as being in the forest, but it was good doing research, you know what I mean. I'm planning to do more workshops in the future, and I'm also hoping to do a play part that I'm hoping to make using radio components. And the first part's been designed, which is the coil, to have that as a climbing frame. So I'm really looking for funding for that. So if there are any really rich patrons listening and they've got a sculpture park and they want to help me, I'd really love that help. I've got 1 minute left, so that was kind of where I am. You can find me, maxhall.com. I'm on Instagram a lot under my name, Paul Mags Backwards. And it's really, really kind of you to come and hear about my practice. And do go on my website and have a listen to some of the sounds themselves. There you go, time is up. But thanks very much for coming. Happy to chat to you wherever my little stuff is.
Sorry,
10 minutes, yeah. Not 1 minute. Oh, we can have
questions then. Any questions? Yeah. So you talked about 1920s and alien intelligence. Like, can you talk a little bit about the history of antennas? I hadn't heard about that. What's the difference?
Well, basically, they were using in agriculture in France. They were thinking it was kind of a precursor to greenhouses, really, thinking about how they could use antennas to help the plants grow, to help bring electrical energy from the sun into the ground. So that's where that electroculture came from. This idea, you know, I know a lot of people are doing it on the internet now, and there's a lot of people just wrapping a bit of wire around a pencil and sticking it next to their plants and seeing if it grows a bit faster. But there was a lot of sort of scientific exploration happening, but it never really took off, and it's never been proven to really work that well. But interestingly, when I did see my radio air gardens, immediately it attracted pollinators. The bees just went mad for it straight away. They just loved the coils. And we did some tests, and we did see that an electrical frequency in with the coils in the soil did change the amount. So I'm not a scientist, but I would love to get more scientists involved into why that happened. Yes. So the bee's magnetism is definitely affected by the coils and the antenna. So it's bringing in more pollinators to the plants, but also it's bringing warmth to the plants. So I found that plants that did have the coils in were growing quicker and faster because they're getting a bit more warmth whilst they're growing. And I also think of them as a bit like a totem, because to me their sound sculptures are nice things to look at. And so I was kind of riffing on that too, because I wanted to kind of disprove it, but then I found that there were, you know, like anything, when you think about it, most gardens, people have got different kinds of metal structures to help their plants grow. They're everywhere. And in fact, they are helping them grow. So they are providing a service in some way. Yeah.
I have a question, but on the point you today, I'm just tuned. I've got a polytunnel, just grey veg. In a polytunnel, and I tuned it and turned it into an antenna because I am one of those nerdy radio amateurs. I got told off for it. You have just given me permission to turn the entire greenhouse into an antenna. Thank you. So it's worth thinking to Ian for that. But initially, what was the spark that got you this deeply into such a creative use of radio?
It's hard to say, because I think, like most people, when I was a kid, my dad was a bit of a tinkerer. And I remember us having these like massive radio, and I always wanted to do the tinkering, but I was discouraged because I remember asking for a chemistry set and I wasn't allowed to have one. So it's kind of that feeling of like, I want to have a go too. Why am I not, you know, it was like you had to choose arts or science, and I went down an arts road, but now I can see that they're totally well matched. So I think with radio, it's just one of those things. I think everyone's always a little bit neurodiverse, possibly, and it takes you into an area, and then you start looking in that area, and that hole gets bigger and bigger. And it just, it's been really fascinating. So I think, you know, as a kid, I did have a go on reel to reels and do my own radio show. And it's funny, last week I was doing reel to reel tape loops with making loops again, which I wasn't making loops when I was a kid, obviously. But there was that kind of there's a bit of fun and passion for it. You just get excited about these things. So I would say when it came to radio art, when I got involved with Resonance FM in 1998, when I helped out that station, I heard about radio art, and once I'd heard about it, I just couldn't look back. It's kind of like you don't have conventional broadcasting in the UK, it was very limited, and it wasn't that inspiring or experimental. When you realised you could just do anything, it kind of became more interesting. And when I met Lignar, who are a German artist who did things like radio ballets, where they got people to come together and do mass actions with radio in a kind of, I think we call them, I've got what we call them now, where people bring together their head, silent discos sort of things. But these were silent discos with radios, they're precursor to silent discos, but they were quite activist. It was really interesting. So yeah, those kind of things. Any other questions? And any other sound artists or radio artists in the audience? Yes, I recognise one. We'll have to have a drink afterward. So I think
I've got one question. Have you ever looked at mycelium as a sort of, because some people are saying that the mycelium connects all the plants and it's sort of like the internet for plants.
Yeah, I have noticed that there has been quite a lot of writing and books around the sort of the how fungi work and the networks, and also networks through trees. So I kind of, although I haven't made a project around that, I suppose the nearest to it would have been the ash dye project, that dieback project, because that's carried by spores, which could be seen as a type of fungi that causes that ash dieback. But I haven't done one specifically on mushrooms, but I know other people have, so... There's quite a few. I think it's almost become a little bit of a sound art cliche to do mushrooms in a way. But there is a thing called geranium, which is, you got me thinking about, which is the type of thing they used to use to, when they made early radios. They used this instead of using, I can't think of a word for it now, but instead of using a crystal, they grow these crystals in laboratories, and I love the idea of growing stuff like that, but I think it was highly radioactive and dangerous. But the idea of just growing crystals for radio sets would be really good fun.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, well, thank you so much again. Sorry the heat is affecting my ability to communicate as well as I need.